Each of us has a story about where we were 15 years ago on this day. Those of you who were living here in Sarasota in 2001, remember that the president was here that morning at Emma Booker Elementary School, just a short distance away from where we are today. Adults who lost partners, children who lost parents that day, no doubt feel sadness on this 15th anniversary. In the same way, all of us have lost loved ones in the course of our lives. I have some experience with short-term grief. I've met with families and officiated at many memorial and funeral services over the years. Although each person's experience of grief is different, each person is unique. Observing others and observing myself, I've noticed some common feelings. At first, there's shock at the death. We often feel it cannot be true. As the reality sets in, we feel a deep sadness. Sometimes if the person's been sick for a long time, there's also a feeling of relief as well as sadness because the suffering is over. We may feel regret or guilt about a visit or a phone call that we didn't get around to making. Sometimes we feel anger. We may be angry with the doctors, angry with the person who has died, or even angry with the minister who doesn't do a perfect job in the memorial service. Sometimes we feel fear. We fear for our future. How will we live without this important relationship? In the days right after a death, these are some of the feelings we might have. Still, each of us is unique in how we grieve, and each of us has the right to grieve in our own way. I have less experience with what happens to our grief over the years. So I've consulted the literature on the topic. In a book called The Other Side of Sadness and a book called The Truth About Grief, the writers argue that within a few months after the death of a loved one, about 90% of us recover and move forward with our lives. About 10% of us have grief reactions that continue to interfere with our ability to function for several years after a loved one's death. And these folks, this 10%, might benefit from therapy and sometimes medication. I've thought about this in terms of my own life. When I was 14, my mother died after a long illness. I felt shock, numbness, and a deep sadness. I had the feeling that my mother's death had changed my life and the life of my sisters, my brother, my father, and me forever. My family structure was broken and would never return to the way it was. At 14, my childhood felt like it was over. But what helped me during that time, right after my mother's death, was my extended family. My mother's sisters and her brother came to town, and they stayed for a while. The gathering of the extended family was a positive experience, giving me the feeling that I was not alone. And then after they left, I found myself turning to the community of the Unitarian Universalist Church, to the high school youth group. My friends in the group, the adult youth advisors, the minister of the church, the director of religious education in the church, they all gave me support. My extended family and my church family helped me keep going. And the research supports my experience. we are more likely to recover from loss when we have the support of family and the support of a religious community of friends. Now, 6 months after my mother's death, I went with other high school friends from the church to ride in inner tubes down a river. I was still feeling the loss of my mother. Nevertheless, I remember that day on the river, I laughed with my friends. The sun was hot, but I felt the cold river water against my skin. A part of me felt a little guilty for having so much fun, but mostly I felt the intense, wonderful feeling, the excitement of being young and enjoying life with my friends. I moved forward with my life, graduating from high school and the university, and working in my first part-time minimum wage jobs. Then I went on to graduate school to become a minister. Obviously, the experience of my mother's death played a part in this decision. I wanted to be helpful to others in the same way that I had found the church helpful to me. In graduate school and seminary, I took classes entitled On Death and Dying. And in the class, I did not learn what I really wanted to know. I wanted to know what happens to us when we die. I had a personal suspicion, one that continues to this day, that some sort of consciousness continues after we die. But I have no proof. As a minister, when I meet with families, instead of pretending that I know all the answers, instead I found myself reduced to trying to show by my words that I am listening to their feelings, and I try to show my sympathy. But I wonder about long-term grief. As time passes, do we reach a point of closure when we just put our grief behind us? A colleague, a minister who is about 15 years older than I am, shared with me an experience he had at a workshop. My colleague, and his name was David, his name is David, said that the leader of the workshop asked everyone to lie down on the carpeted floor in the conference room in a comfortable position, to lie down. And after everyone did this and everyone was relaxed, the leader said, "Try to find the place within you where you keep your personal pain and your grief." Now, lying on the floor, David said that he thought to himself, "Now, how can she confidently assume that all of us have some secret pain or loss that we are clutching to ourselves? How dare she assume that none of us is mature enough to have gotten over our pains and our griefs? Besides, what does she mean when she says, locate the places within ourselves where such feelings reside? The whole process is foolish," she thought. Now, just as David, as a good skeptical Unitarian Universalist, had convinced himself that nothing more could happen, he suddenly became aware of the sensation of a heavy weight. Now, not a physical pain, but an emotional block of grief in the midst of his chest. This feeling so surprised him that he almost missed the next instruction. The leader invited the group to breathe into the place and release all the pent-up pain and sorrow. By this time, David was too surprised by his feelings to argue with her directive. However, before he could draw a breath, a reaction stirred within him that astonished him. He felt a strong conviction that he did not want to release that emotional pain and sorrow, even if it were possible. He felt a conviction that that pain and sorrow were much too important to him. My colleague left this exercise feeling confused by this. Something had happened that he didn't understand. He had not been aware of any real sense of grief. Still, he felt a sensation of heaviness in his chest and the strong feeling that there was something that he did not want to lose. Later in the workshop, the leader asked the group to think about the experience they had had. The leader asked them, "What happened? Where does it hurt? What do you want to do about it? What myth are you living?" Again, David was skeptical, questioning in his mind the validity of the assumptions implied in the questions. However, he had paid his money to attend the workshop, so he decided to try to follow the instructions. To his intense surprise, as he thought about the questions, he heard himself saying in his head, "I've always been hurt. I cannot remember a time before the wounding." Then, with a grasp of self-recognition, he said to himself, "I've never stopped grieving for my mother, who died when I was 9 months old." There it was, out in the open, his old grief, which he had been carrying all his life. However, even more astonishing, when he thought about the question, "What do you want to do about it?" he was amazed to realize that he did not want to do anything about it. He said to himself, "I do not want to get over it. That pain, that hurt, is part of what makes me who I am. It is a source of whatever strengths, whatever resources I possess. I want to embrace it, to own it, and experience it." Perhaps this is common when it comes to long-term grief. Perhaps because we love, we never completely get over the big losses in our lives. The losses instead become part of who we are. This is not a sign that there's something wrong with us, not a sign that we need to go into therapy or that we need medication, not a sign that we need to fix ourselves. This is just a part of the reality of loving others and loving life. I think of the death of my mother 50 years ago. I felt shock and sadness and fear. Being part of a church community helped me keep going, helped me move on beyond those feelings. I turned to others for support. I was not alone because of my friends. And within a few months, feelings of joy and happiness returned to my life. But I did not completely get over that loss. Instead, in the months and years that followed, I dreamed about my mother, including dreams with conversations with her. The memories remained. And in some ways, her personality seemed to merge into mine. This has been my experience with long-term grief. So today is the 15th anniversary of the attack on the Pentagon and on New York. I hope the surviving friends and families have long ago moved on with their lives. I hope they are experiencing joy and excitement, laughter, living their lives fully, enjoying the beauty and the wonder of life in the world. However, I don't expect them to get over their loss completely. Because we are the creatures who have the ability to love and the ability to remember, our past losses are part of who we are today. Because we are open to love, we are vulnerable. We can be hurt. Our great challenge is to remain open to both our love of life and the grief of loss, and allow each to be experienced fully and completely.